DW Africa Link.
Tanzania's President Samia Suluhu Hassan has been sworn in for her first elected term. That's after a landslide win in recent elections that gave her nearly 98% of the vote. However, her victory has been clouded by controversy, violence, internet blackout, and mounting questions about democracy in Tanzania. As we look to the future, the path ahead is uncertain. So how did we get here? And what happens next? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr. And you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Hassan's inauguration took place on Monday at the State House in Dodoma, with only officials and invited dignitaries present. That's a departure from the past, when the president took the oath of office in packed football stadiums where the public cheered loudly. According to reports, state TV had earlier announced that the public would not be allowed to attend, citing security concerns. Now, outside the ceremony grounds, the country remained tense and largely disconnected from the world. A total internet blackout has been in place since protests erupted on Election Day. That's made it nearly impossible to verify what's happening on the ground. But reports from hospitals and diplomatic sources paint a grim picture. Opposition groups claim hundreds were killed, though the UN Human Rights Office confirmed at least 10 deaths. The government, however, says those reports are exaggerated. Let's get more from Isabel Brenda, Executive Director of Governance Hub Africa, a civil society group. I also have DW correspondent Isaac Kaleji. Hello to the both of you. Welcome to Africa Link. Isabel, I'm going to start with you. Give us a rundown of how we got to this point.
All right. Thank you so much, Eddie, for the question. And it's a pleasure to, of course, be here to just do a post-mortem of the Tanzanian election. I think what we have seen, especially being a resident of East Africa, is extremely depressing in terms of how much we're retrogressing back to the dark days. Tanzania's election, and I think as we go on with the interview, we will be able to break down what credibility in an election looks like, at least the basics, right? Of course, we have seen Tanzanians went to the polls. We have seen there was a level of intimidation of opposition leaders and voter suppression in terms of just the kind of intimidation and the aura that was created in the country for people to be able to go and exercise their civic right and duty to vote for their preferred candidate. Of course, from the ballot, we had, there were 16 people on the ballot paper. However, the key opposition figures were sort of strategically eliminated from that process. One of them is in jail. Somebody was lost their lives, I think, sometime last year. I will talk more about that. And that level of intimidation in terms of just fairness in the electoral process was missing. Now, what we've seen is that Tanzanians, of course, for the first time in history, Tanzanians are known as the Canadians of Africa, or at least East Africa. I say that because they are very unproblematic people. So for you to see Tanzanians run to the street and cause the kind of havoc that we've seen, of course, the state, from the time the election began, they, of course, switched off the internet and made sure communication and connectivity was difficult so that the international community cannot see what is happening in terms of just unfairness of the electoral process, but also in terms of the citizen unrest in fighting for their rights and the refusal to lay back and allow their democracy to be mutilated. I think the world has not seen what it needed to see. Some of us in East Africa, who are also working very closely with human rights activists in Tanzania, may have had a glimpse of pictures, videos, and voice notes of what is happening in the country that the international media will never see. So I think from my point of view, what we have seen is, I think, I don't want to sound extreme, but this was a very terrible example of anything that can be called an election.
Where we are at now is that Samia Suluhu Hassan has been sworn in. We are recording this podcast on the 3rd of November, 2025. And just a few hours ago, she was officially sworn in as president. Do we know how the event went? How many people could actually even watch it? What came out of that? If she said anything official yet, Brenda?
So first of all, the swearing-in ceremony is happening at the military barracks in Dodoma. Why any president would want to be sworn in at a military barracks, especially this is not the norm in Tanzania, obviously is very telling. The second thing is the president spoke. I think it was very well choreographed. It looks very well choreographed in terms of even the people that were there. Of course, they were delivered to the stadium with buses. And you know, these are, of course, the ruling parties, of course, supporters. You could see them singing and whatnot. But of course, most of Tanzanians are still on lockdown. They're not allowed to protest. The internet is being switched on and off intermittently. Mostly it's off, so they cannot even communicate with their loved ones. So we are seeing a level of suppression in terms of even just people being able to express themselves and their dissatisfaction in the electoral process, which has been largely described as a sham. Now, the worst part of this is that when the president spoke, when President Samia Suluhu spoke this weekend, she said that the election was free, fair, and credible. And basically, it is, even if you just look at the basics of what an election looks like, this does not qualify as anything that she described. But of course, she's trying to sanitize the process by, you know, coloring it with very flowery words. But something very important to note is that even in the region, in East Africa, forget the fact that the AU was very quick to go and sanitize and say, congratulations, Mama Samia. For the Africa Union to rush in to congratulate a process that was extremely flawed by any standard, I think is very telling for Africa. And it's extremely concerning knowing what the role of Africa Union is supposed to do to represent the rest of the African nations. And then if you look at East Africa, Kenya, Uganda, were very slow to offer their congratulatory messages. Of course, countries like Somalia offered their congratulatory messages almost immediately. But I think Kenya, if when I looked at the statement that the president released today in congratulating President Samia, you can tell even the Kenyan president was very cautious with his words. He never said that in his statement, it was very clear. He just said, we hereby congratulate the president of the Republic of Tanzania for being elected the president. And he said that they are calling for the government of Tanzania to consider dialogue with, of course, the opposition leaders and try and find a solution. And he called for peace and calm in the country, you know, just reiterating that Kenya shares very strong trade and friendly ties with Tanzania, and we wish them well.
Right. Thank you, Isabel, for that. And Isaac, you've listened to all that Isabel has said. You have been involved in everything Tanzania before, during and after the elections. You've spoken to some experts. We're hearing so many different things. I mean, the opposition talking about hundreds of people being killed. The UN at least is able to say that around 10 people or so. Tanzania's government saying that all these figures are exaggerated. What can you tell us, Isaac, about the situation on the ground in Tanzania?
Yeah, so honestly, it's been quite difficult actually confirming a lot of things in Tanzania because of the disruption to internet or the shutdown of the internet. So it's very, very difficult. And even colleagues, journalists who report from Tanzania are really struggling to even get information out. And so, again, because, of course, the fear for their lives and all that. And so it's really difficult to confirm. But basically, despite the challenges, we still get information from Tanzania. And the situation really is not that good at all. Again, I mean, if a government would decide to shut down the internet, and I've heard the foreign affairs minister talk, and really there's no justification for shutting the internet because, I mean, when he says that they are shutting it down because they don't want to create chaos and all that. I mean, a government really is open in terms of governance. I mean, there's nothing to really to hide. And because of that, the information we are getting is that the situation is very dire and very bad in the country. And that, again, that's why you see that the government is not able to confirm even figures, really, to just tell us exactly what really the situation is as to whether deaths, the numbers are even 10 or even hundreds, has been confirmed by the opposition. But the opposition has information or has sources on the ground, and they are able to give us some of these details. So to just tell you briefly, the situation on the ground is terrible, and it's, the evidence even is in how the government is controlling the whole issue of how we know what is going on in Tanzania at the moment.
Yeah, in some cases, electricity or power outage is still the situation on the ground. We're also understanding food prices are skyrocketing, so cost of living is gradually increasing. What does this all signal, Isaac?
For me, it just shows that good governance is not happening in Tanzania, okay? Because we've had elections across Africa. I mean, and it was open in terms of the internet was open. There was not so much intimidation. People could freely go and cast their ballot and monitor the election. So for me, it tells us that good governance is not taking place. The government, I don't know what is hiding or what it's afraid of, but it shows that really the government is becoming unpopular, and it has to try as much as it can to open up the country. And I think that even the challenge with even election observers to come in and really do the work they need to do is quite frustrating. For example, just a while ago, SADC issued observation team that went to Tanzania, issued a statement, and clearly they've stated in there that they even had challenges as observers to get accreditation to go into the country and observe the election. They mentioned issues related to security and indicated that happenings on the ground that do not really affirm that the election really was held in a free and fair process, right? So it tells you a lot, even for the sub-regional body to issue this statement a while ago.
Just a lot going on. I'm going to come back to you, Isabel. I mean, just for listeners, just to be clear, Isabel, you're from Kenya. Now, to be honest, I've heard a lot of strong Kenyan voices when it comes to Tanzania's election. And so it's only fair that I would want to get this from you, because Tanzanian politics, generally, it often ripples beyond its borders. Why should Kenyans and East Africans in general care about what's happening in Tanzania right now?
I think one of the things that we may want to appreciate is that Kenya and Tanzania are very close trading partners. And recently, we have experienced situations where the Tanzanian government has, I think, rattled Kenya in terms of, a squabble. It's a trade squabble. I think in terms of the East African Economic Corridor, Kenya and Tanzania do a lot of business together. But the silent trade war, I think, is something that Kenyans are particularly concerned about. Recently, we have seen a situation with President Samia Suluhu where she has been banning foreign nationals from trading in certain sectors. So basically, there are always persistent non-tariff barriers, things like permit denials for Kenyan traders, ban on goods such as milk, maize, gas, restrictions on Kenyan traders in Tanzania, sometimes denial of cargo aircrafts into Tanzania, So these kind of things, I think, have created a diplomatic issue between Kenya and Tanzania. And I think when the Kenyans at the border were demonstrating about these unfair trade practices, and also because a lot of Kenyans have invested, and this has created employment for both Kenyans and Tanzanians. So this became an issue that I think right before the elections, a lot of Kenyans were talking about. So particularly Kenyans took interest in the Tanzanian election. Now, the Kenyan government, of course, through its diplomatic challenges, have raised concerns about how this contravenes it violates the East African Community protocols, because it is hindering free trade as part of, you know, of course, both countries are part of the East African Community and have ratified the signatures based on some of these protocols. So I think the interest between Kenya and Tanzania is not just one that is political. It's not just the Gen Zs wanting to interfere, as most people may not maybe know. It is also a trade issue between Kenya and Tanzania that, of course, is affecting a lot of livelihoods.
There's people that have been saying Kenyans are interfering in what's going on in Tanzania and leave Tanzanians alone to deal with the issues. What's your response to those comments?
Of course, we have there's something Swahili people call ujamaa. Ujamaa is the neighborhoodness that we have between Kenya and Tanzania. So we're like siblings. So basically, when Kenyans are rioting and fighting against the finance bill, for example, you will have the Gen Zs of Tanzania supporting Kenya. Now, of course, when we look at the border between Kenya and Tanzania, there's a lot of, there's a lot of neighborliness happening there. There's a lot of intermarriages that have happened there. So, of course, these border points are places where Kenyans that are fond of Tanzania may want to interact in a way that sometimes is not proper. For example, having Kenyan Gen Zs, you know, go through border points, of course, sometimes legally or illegally getting into Tanzania to join into the protests. I believe that is not a good thing to do. However, I have seen the head of the military in Tanzania reporting that the demonstrations in Tanzania are not being done by Tanzanians. They're being done by illegal immigrants from the neighboring countries. Of course, that is false, because the people in the streets of Tanzania, if Suluhu truly won 98% of the votes, cannot be 2%. So I think the situation between Kenya and Tanzania, we have a very good relationship as nations. However, we have had a bit of diplomatic squabbles here and there, basically due to trade.
Right.
But the relationship between the Gen Zs in Kenya and Tanzania is, I think, one that should be uploaded, where if your neighbor is going through something, you want to support. However, how that support comes through from Kenya to Tanzania is also something else that we can discuss on another day.
What happens in one country definitely creates ripple effects in other neighboring countries. We've seen that all across the continent. So, you know, it should be of concern. Isaac, what you also mentioned is because under former President Magufuli, he was known as the hardliner. And then Samia Suluhu became president and people felt, oh, she's more calm, she's more of unity, gonna reduce tensions. Has that happened in any way? Because that's not what we're saying, are we? Are we even saying that Samia Suluhu is even more hardlined than former President Magufuli?
Well, I mean, it's not just even observers, people who are watching Tanzania that are saying, comparing 2020 election to 2025. I mean, even the opposition that had issues with Magufuli, they've said that she's worse than Magufuli, right? For example, in the 2020 election, I mean, Lusu Tindulusu actually contested. I mean, it obviously would tell you that, yes, even though Magufuli was a hardliner, he allowed for his political rivals actually to also contest the election, right? And so if you look at, for example, this time around, none of the key opposition parties or challengers to her contested. In this context, we are talking about Chadema. Obviously, it tells you the narrative. I mean, if you hear that he won the election by nearly 98% and Magufuli won by 84%, I mean, it tells you the changing narrative. So I think that because she was a human figure, and there's nothing wrong about people anticipating that she will be more calmer than Magufuli. I also don't think that she has to just be soft because she's a woman, but I think that she's a president, and as a leader, obviously the yardstick or the standards that every leader will be judged by, it doesn't matter whether you're a woman or a man, you have to be judged by that. And I think that at least if Magufuli era wasn't that open up in terms of allowing the opposition to operate, things should have improved, right? And I think that's the disappointment for a lot of people. And like Brenda said, I mean, to even have a swearing-in ceremony taking place at the military barracks obviously tells you that indeed that there's something happening in the country. It should have been held maybe publicly. We should have other government presidents attending in their numbers to see that kind of solidarity. But that is not the case. So it tells you a lot.
Right. Isabel, what can we expect from Samia Suluhu right now? She's just been sworn in. She is officially the current president of Tanzania. What should she do next?
That's a very interesting question, Eddie. And the first thing I would do as president is acknowledge that Africans are no longer ignorant. You know, the ground that old political leaders are standing on shifted a long time ago. If you'd like evidence to that, you would look at how the world is moving right now. The political climate is extremely intolerant, intolerant to oppression, intolerant to authoritarianism. And as much as some of our parents and our grandparents and our ancestors and some of us may have taken it, the young people of this continent are not going to stand down and watch atrocities happen. Now, one thing that she must also realize is that we are aware, and when I say we, I mean as citizens of the world, we are aware that oppression has no gender. So for me, I speak as a woman, and I am not going to lean towards Suluhu because she's simply a woman, because if she turns out to be a dictator, worse than the other dictators we've seen in Africa, I will definitely call her out because oppression has no gender. So she's not going to hide behind the gender card. We're going to hold her accountable for the lives that have been lost. The state, according to the foreign minister, they're saying that only 10 people have died, as though 10 people dying of extrajudicial killings are okay. But the numbers we're getting are also quite alarming based on human rights observers and other sources. But in terms of what she has to do right now, she has to focus on reconciliation. She has to reconcile the country, whether she realizes it or not. The opposition leader, especially with the largest following, Tundu Lissu, and the others that have been oppressed, including the others whose leaders were taken out and killed, she may have to reach out to them, because I don't think this storm can be calmed down by just locking yourself in a barracks and announcing yourself president.
Thank you very much for those last words, Isabel. And you have your final say, Isaac. I mean, as someone who's involved in covering many other elections on the ground, based on all that you've gathered from Tanzania, we know that Uganda and Kenya will also be heading to the polls in 2026 and 2027, respectively, Isaac, right? What lessons can these countries take from Tanzania's experience, both the good, the bad, and the ugly?
I just think one thing that these countries have to be aware of is that things have changed. We're in a different world now, right? With social media, with the Gen Zs, young people, there's absolutely no way you could suppress these people in trying to really express themselves, right? And I think it's a simple thing for political leaders. Ruling a country is not like an inheritance, right? It's a privilege to serve people.
Thank you very much, Isaac. Strong words to wrap this up. And we'll definitely be keeping tabs on what goes on in the country. For those of you listening, you can get more of our coverage, the latest happening on the ground, via our different platforms on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook, on YouTube. We are everywhere covering the situation on the ground. Thank you very much, Isabel Brenda, Executive Director of Governance Hub Africa, and DW Correspondent Isaac Kaleji in Accra, Ghana. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
As Tanzania settles under curfew and censorship, the need for dialogue and peace becomes more urgent. Schools remain closed, public transport suspended, and many towns under curfew. With all that's going on, even the Vatican weighed in. Pope Leo called for prayers for Tanzania, urging both sides to avoid violence and pursue the path of dialogue. So will President Samia Suluhu Hassan use her new mandate to restore calm or tighten control? We will keep you posted. In the meantime, share your thoughts with us on Facebook at DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe, and I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW News.
Here are today's top news stories and why they matter. Tanzania's President Samia Suluhu Hassan was sworn in this morning in a tightly controlled ceremony at the military parade grounds in Dodoma following her landslide victory in Wednesday's disputed election. The event, which was closed to the public, marks the beginning of her second term in office. Suluhu, who secured 97.66% of the vote, according to the National Electoral Commission, faced no major opposition after key challenges were barred or jailed. The opposition party Chadema, which was excluded from the race, has rejected the results, describing it as fake results from fake elections. Unverified images of killings have surfaced on social media, and Chadema claims hundreds have died in post-election violence, though the government has dismissed these figures as exaggerated. Meanwhile, speaking to DW, Chadema officials demanded the immediate release of their party leader, Tundu Lissu, who remains in detention on charges of treason.
They know well there were no counting of votes. Maybe I should ask you if you have seen anywhere votes being counted or any polling station where votes one by one. There were no places. We don't know. The public doesn't know where this vote's coming from. And the standing of the public is there were no elections in Tanzania, and that's their position, and it should be respected. I would also ask Samia Suluhu Hassan, you have rigged the election as you have planned. Now release Tundu Lissu from detention. He shouldn't have been there. He is still there. Let him out quickly, as soon as possible, so that we can continue with our political movement. And number two, all those political detainees, we had a big number of political detainees who are spending time in prisons unnecessarily. They should be unconditionally released.
The Mo Ibrahim Foundation has issued a statement condemning the violence against demonstrators in Tanzania, calling it unacceptable. The foundation urged President Samia Suluhu Hassan to ensure peace, security, and the rule of law, warning that continued unrest could deter private investment in Africa. Nigeria's government has dismissed accusations by U.S. President Donald Trump that it is failing to protect Christians from Islamist extremists following a dramatic threat of possible American military intervention. Here is DW's Abiodun Jamiu on how Nigerians are reacting.
The warning has sparked alarm across Nigeria, where citizens and officials are reacting to what many see as an inflammatory and oversimplified portrayal of a complex security crisis. President Bola Ahmed Tinubu also rejected the characterization of Nigeria as religiously intolerant, stating that the country's constitution guarantees freedom of worship and that governments remain committed to protecting all citizens, regardless of religion. While Christian communities have suffered devastating attacks, analysts and white groups point out that Muslims are also frequent victims of extremist violence, particularly in Nigeria's northeast, where Boko Haram and ISWAP operate. I've been speaking with Nigerians, and here is what they told me.
Nigerian Christians have been under terrorism, especially by Islamic terrorist groups. And many people have been displaced out of their homes, and pastors have been killed, churches have been burned, and other people are now occupying the homes, and government is doing nothing about it.
The issue of genocide being committed on Christians in Nigeria by Muslims is not true. Simply because, from my view, I see it as an act of terrorism rather than the faith issue. And if my concern and fear is that if U.S. will cut their aid being given to Nigeria, the society will become more vulnerable.
And finally, at least 26 people have been confirmed dead and more than 30 remain missing after a devastating landslide swept through villages in Kenya's Rift Valley region over the weekend. Local authorities say rescue operations are ongoing, with emergency teams digging through debris in search of survivors. Kenya's Red Cross and military personnel have been deployed to assist in the recovery efforts. And that's all we had lined up for today. Don't forget to like, share, comment, and subscribe to our channel, DW Africa. I'm Lucy Riley.
DW, made for mind.